둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from County Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season four. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcasts and join me for the story behind the song.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
The Opus, an exploration of legendary records and their ongoing legacy. Not just the history, but how this music continues to evolve, shaping lives, shaking rafters, and ingraining itself into our culture. We're opening the vault on a recent classic records re-release, delving into its inner workings and lasting impact. Maybe you're a longtime fan who wants to go deeper. Maybe you're a first-time listener and you're curious to hear more. Either way, you're in the right place. Find us at Consequence of Sound, iTunes, or wherever you tune into podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With, an interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Hey, take a second before we get started to hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening from right now. You can get this on Spotify, on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, wherever you get your favorite podcast from. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all of the interviews that we put out every single week. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest is David Gray. He's back with another record called Gold in a Brass Age. And this time around, he's trying some new things, getting away from regular storytelling and narrative, though we're going to get some themes about nature, slowing down. Of course, this comes on his 50th birthday, so maybe it is time for a little reflection, but also renewal and changing his perspective, taking a little bit of influence from Steve Reich, and with a sharp eye of what's happening with the environment right now. We'll also turn back those clocks to 1998. That was the first time he released his breakthrough album, White Ladder, that would go on to be released in 99 and 2000 as well. We'll talk a little bit about that, especially what that album means now and how it's going to sound on this upcoming tour. Talking about the record Gold in a Brass Age, it's Kyle Meredith with David Gray.
Hey, Kyle.
Congratulations on Gold in a Brass Age.
Thanks very much.
We're such big fans here in Louisville. I know you've been to the station a few times, but it's exciting any time to hear new music from you, and such a really interesting and beautiful record you've put out once again.
Thanks, man.
I think I read somewhere that you were talking about one of the things you wanted to challenge yourself with this album this time around was to getting away from narrative. And if that's right, I was kind of curious what exactly that means to you.
Yeah, as in just like storytelling songs. So, you know, where the inclination is to try and tell a story directly. So I guess what I'm looking for is a more abstract path towards the things I'm trying to say that aren't just quite as obvious as songs that build through narrative structure to a sort of chorus where everything sort of focuses. So I'm trying to take a different route just because it's become too predictable just going hard at the song. I'm looking for other ways to crack the thing open.
So what did you find out? Because you still do end up telling stories sometimes in you know, broad strokes on this record, but they still find their way out.
Of course, because I think this is what you discover when you change your processes. The story tells itself anyway. So just by juxtaposing one idea next to another, it begins to tell a story. You put two things together and they interact. And the story, it begins in the imagination. When you imagine two images or two ideas set next to each other, they start to try and tell a tale. And for each person, that will be different.
How hard was that for you? Because, I mean, breaking something that you've done in a certain way, more or less, for, you know, 25 years. I mean, what was the process to actually get to that point?
I think it's taken a while. It's not just happened overnight. I didn't just wake up on this record. It's a process that's been in evidence. I've been dismantling my songwriting for many years, you know, stretching right back to sort of life in slow motion, really. I think that there was a sort of, I was looking for other ways. So it's been a slow unraveling and observing the way other people's words or music work and just how little you need and how much the music itself, the flavor of the music, the sound of the music, the sounds you're using and the way the chords work, the way that tells a story or creates an atmosphere. It almost creates the landscape and then the words are just the character that walks into it. So there's already a story being told, but this is something I've been working on over many records. It's just, I think some of the breakthroughs I had maybe on Mutiny is, and with other songs I've written in the last 5, 6, 7 years have just encouraged me further on that path. It's almost like abstraction over figurative painting. It's almost like moving away from direct sort of figurative work into something that's more abstract and allows the brain to sort of, you know, ruminate on the imagery and come up with its own ideas. So it didn't just happen overnight. It's happened slowly.
I'm really glad you brought up Life in Slow Motion because I feel like at least just those words, it sort of plays into what some of those stories that you're telling on this record, because it does seem to be about slowing down in you know, which, I don't know, that's something we always hear about, but we rarely do it. And if we do, it's to tune out completely.
Time is a big sort of recurring motif. But obviously, time is passing, or, you know, I'm getting older. I'm seeing the world from a slightly different point of view. So I guess that's something that recurs throughout the record. You know, the first track, Sapling, starts with a sort of time-lapse kind of idea of slowing down and watching speeded up image of an acorn falling, a drop of life falling and taking root in the earth. And then you almost watch as the concentric circles emerge like ripples from the tiny seed and the plant grows. So there's a sense of watching time itself. And that obviously comes through in a few of the different songs. It's definitely a song about this stage of my life.
I mean, it should be noted, maybe in a trivial way, sort of, but this also, you know, arrives, you turned 50 this year. I mean, that's got to mean something towards what you're talking about.
Yeah, the thing is, I look absolutely gorgeous. I look better now than I ever have.
That's absolutely true.
That's what's weird about it.
No, but, you know, it's because what you're talking about also, I feel like there is a line that's drawn into some stuff that's happening, because there's a sense of this record about getting away from the noise and heading out into the nature, you know, just to use that in a somewhat generic term there. But you know, for such a fan of nature as you come across, because, you know, the way you talk about even just walking around the block takes on a poetic cadence sometimes in what you're seeing. And what an interesting time for this record to come out when we're hearing all all of these reports about these environmental reports and the catastrophes that's happening. I don't know. Has that have you noticed the connection there?
That stuff. It's how it gets gripped by the mainstream media. These reports have been coming out for decades. I mean, you know, it's deeply disturbing our capacity to ignore what's so obvious. So, yeah, I'm dialed into all that stuff and always have been. But walking out into the wild is my ultimate way of release, really, from just being a person in the modern social pressurized capacity. It just allows you to sort of open up your senses and think in a broader way, not just narrow, agitated, focused thoughts, to wonder, to dream, and to absorb the detail of seasons changing, of time passing, of flowers opening and closing, and the changes of grass blowing in the wind, whatever it is. I like to get out into that stuff and try and place myself in a different context and lose off some of the human sort of accretions that have basically sort of covered my eyes. And just to see and just be, that's my way of recharging myself. And only really in the last 5 or 6 years have I started to realize how essential it is that I manage to do that at least a few times a year, like properly get out and walk for a good few days, you know, and just get in rhythm with something that isn't business or work or the news. So, you know, yeah, these are disturbing times. I think that the era of politics we're in just sharpens everyone's sense of desperation. It's a strange time. We're all being eaten by our own political demons on both sides of the Atlantic. It's very key to see how people are shrinking their ideas in response to something that's obviously international. It's worldwide, and everyone's just shrinking back into America first, or UK first, or Scotland first, or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Everyone just goes the other way, not towards opening their arms to something broader. In their anxiety, they seem to shrink backwards into what was before, what they perceive was the past, the strength of the past. It's all total nonsense, and it never existed. So all that is a part of the context of this record, for sure.
And still, it comes across so beautiful, even with all of that darkness right there. You know, it's a great trick.
Thanks very much. I mean, I had such a joyous experience in making this record. It was such a wildly creative and open-hearted experience. I've rarely enjoyed a making process as much as I did. And is that because you need the songs more than you've ever needed them? I just don't know. But I enjoyed making this record and working with Ben DeVries, who's the level of detail that we got into. The record was made very fast in terms of the writing and the sort of gist of each song. And then we spend an awful long time refining our ideas and challenging the sort of sonic aspects of it. So there's just layers of detail. It's something that, yeah, I've had so much fun making it. I can't wait to play it. It's going to be a different type of performance that we when we try and enact this music live. It's got to reflect the way it was made. It was a studio record, so it's an exciting time to be out there with this music now.
Did I read somewhere that it was musically it was a bit Steve Reich influenced?
Not Steve Reich influenced. There's a couple of Steve Reich sort of quotes, if you like, okay. Even on the title track. There's a big sort of trem chord that kind of comes in the chorus, and wah, bah, 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 which is a bit like the trem that he uses in Music for 18 Musicians. He uses it in lots of his pieces of work. I love Steve Reich. I do. And I listen to quite a lot of music that to get away from things. Music without words or without sort of obvious structure. And really that sort of returns to the first question you asked about challenging my own structure, the way that I work a song together, put a song together, and maybe what I've been listening to as well as the way I've been thinking has obviously influenced that. So I wouldn't say it's Steve Reich influenced, that would be ridiculous, but I do admire him. And when I went to see his 80th birthday concert at the Barbican in London, they had Pat Metheny, and they played, the full 13 guitarists played Electric Counterpoint. I don't know if you know that piece of music, but that was absolutely amazing, absolutely blew me away. It's the sort of highlight of the last few years of concert going for me.
And it is. It's healthy to get away from a chorus every now and then, just to hear something, you know, that you can't exactly sing along to.
Yeah, I find it expands my, it works on my attention more like a journey. It's more like looking out of a train window, listening to a piece of Steve Reich, you know, watching something going by, you know, rather than stepping out to touch it. And then suddenly, like any journey, you turn a corner and the whole landscape or the picture in front of you changes dramatically. And there are these moments of sort of crystallization and revelation that you get in these kind of pieces of music that I do love. It's something that I can relate to.
I hope you don't mind me kind of bouncing back in time for just a second, because I noticed that this year it's also sort of the 20th anniversary of White Ladder, and that's the record that sort of also has an anniversary for the next 2 years.
Yeah, it does.
That's what I was wondering. Is like, you know, for you, is this the 20th anniversary, or and do you go back and celebrate records in the way that some artists do by kind of putting that spotlight on them for a special event?
I think the official release in Ireland, which happened ahead of the UK and even further ahead of the US release, was the 27th of November, 1998. So it was officially a couple of weeks ago, the 20th anniversary of its release, which is a wonderful thing. It was a fairy tale, you know, it was a remarkable record that touched so many people, and that was such a crazy journey for us all. We had a wonderful time after years in the wilderness. All of us, you know, had the most crazy time on that roller coaster ride of White Ladder, which went all the way to the top, really. So I think I'm back in touch with Clune these days, and the drummer of White Ladder and co-writer of some of the key songs. And I think it would be rude not to do something to mark the 20th anniversary, but it's a kind of movable feast. I think when the song really became international, when the album really became an international hit, was probably the year 2000. So I think it's probably sensible, if we're going to do something, to try and do something then.
It's, you know, when I read about it, and of course I try to make that connections of then to now, and I thought, you know, here's an album that, you know, recorded in a little bedroom that's looks like it's not so dissimilar to, you know, to Gold in a Brass Age in that way, you know, a studio record that was recorded in a little room.
I do love the intimacy of home recording. I love the directness of it. It's like, it's so fast and so instinctive and so unguarded. And I think for my music personally, I respond to that atmosphere when I'm making. I like to be in the sort of personal space. So at the moment, I'm working down in my basement. It's a bit compared to what we did with White Ladder. What I've got at the moment is an incredible studio in comparison. You know, I've got a live room with drums set up and a piano set up, and acoustic guitar and a vocal booth. I've got a control room, nice speakers, a few nice bits of kit, some lovely mic. You know, with White Ladder, we had next to nothing. We made it with virtually nothing. But the limited palette aspect of it was obviously a key part to it. We had to use our creative powers to make sound and to sculpt something with the little that we had. And in the end, that was a key part of that record. So this Golden Brass Age is similar, in you're right, to draw a connection between the two. I feel that they are related, and the electronic elements of them, but more than that, the atmosphere or the heart or the playfulness of them, the fact that they're definitely, it's not music that could have existed before this time, it's music of now.
You know, you probably, you know, that I know that's a record you probably don't ever get to escape. And when you're talking about what you're going to do live with these songs and the way you're trying to design, you know, the live show, I wonder, because of that, you know, the weight and the history of those songs, does that allow the songs to grow in the same way as some of the others through the years? Or do you feel like they're kind of tethered to a certain nostalgia?
I have evolved the songs, and I have, you know, changed their shape, changed the way I've played them in many, many ways. You know, some of them, like Please Forgive Me, but even Please Forgive Me, I've been playing that as a solo song on my Best Of tour, and it becomes a very sort of sparse, intense, kind of poetic, slow song, because it's the drums that are going, you know, in full time, and the chords are actually in half time. So I've looked at ways, slowed down Sail Away, slowed down Babylon, tried to get the feeling out of them. I think repeating songs, just, you know, the way that they always were, I find it's impossible to maintain an emotional connection with the song. And that's the most important thing. I think we're coming up to the 20th anniversary. I've got all this electronic gear involved with the live set. I'm going to go back into the archive and take some of the actual sounds from those old songs and start using them, I think, in the next couple of years. So they're going to be going back more to what they were on the White Ladder record in some ways. So, I have to try and stretch things out and change things. Some songs it's easy, other songs like This Year's Love or Please Forgive Me, it's harder. They just seem to be what they are. But they're so, I don't know, whatever happened with those songs, they're so sort of perfectly constructed in some way that they sort of just perform themselves and have a massive reaction each time that they're played. So it's not like autopilot. It's still an intense thing, putting them across, but there doesn't seem to be an easy way to reinvent some of them.
Well, I can't wait to hear how they sound on this tour, especially next to these new songs, because it feels like to me that it's going to sound pretty seamless. But I'll mention, too, I believe you're coming here to Louisville in June. You're going to be back into town, so we'll be looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, well, I like your town, with the mighty river flowing by, and all the history you've got there. I've had a few good wanders around. So I'm looking forward to coming back, and it should be fun. I mean, I'm very excited about what is this. Each new album is an exciting thing. You try and take it out there. It's like beginning again, you know, at least for a while, until the road starts really, battering you. For the first month or two, it's a completely new experience, and so it will be with this album. I think in recent years, when I've been coming through America on tour, it's generally been the first tour I've done, and America sort of had the first bite of the cherry. This time around, the US tour will be in the wake of UK, Ireland, Australia, and Europe. So we'll be well honed by the time we get there. And also people have had a chance to live with the music. So I feel like there's going to be a real connection. It's going to be really exciting. I think it's going to be special.
So do I. I can't wait to hear the songs again in that live setting. David, congratulations again, Gold in the Brass Age. It's another beautiful record.
Thanks so much, man.
All right. It was a pleasure talking to you. Take care out there.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. My thanks to David Gray for the call today. Again, the latest record is called Gold in a Brass Age. And hey, if you haven't already, please do hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening from right now, whether that's on YouTube, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, wherever you get your favorite podcast from, hit the subscribe button. Then head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern, where you can also find some bonus episodes of this series. You can find me at Twitter at Kyle Meredith, Facebook.com/Kyle Meredith. That's it for this round. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.